when one develops it, it grows.
John, what is the test, if you like, as to whether what is developing the right path? If we can't tell by whether there's less unwholesomeness in our daily life.
But what about the understanding, more or less?
Well, if there's more, then...
Mm-hmm. And that's the benefit of developing. Because you cannot stop the arising of aversion or attachment, but there can be understanding of reality on and on, little by little.
For some people, that's not enough. What they would like, apart from more understanding of the moment-to-moment realities, but if there's no other benefit, then where's the payoff?
So, at that moment, the wrong practice is not yet completely eradicated. Because one goes along the path, but sometimes one falls off the track because of wrong understanding and the attachment of like the benefit of something. That's why there are three kinds of realities which are called the hindrance, I don't know, which slow down the progress of understanding are attachment and ditti, wrong view, and conceit.
So
only right understanding can see whenever it arises that it hinders or it slows down the progress. It's not because you just want the benefit so you try more. That's wrong. Because right understanding will eliminate desire for everything. First from ignorance and from clinging to the idea of self. Is that not the benefit?
It's not quite the benefit we'd like to see.
It's like a bigger benefit.
So desire is there, attachment
desire
is there,
there
slow down the progress of right understanding.
There.
Yeah.
So there's always clinging to that personality change of samskara. But wouldn't you say in reflecting maybe on the progress that you've had over a period of time, wouldn't you qualify any sort of detachment that has occurred in your life, wouldn't you qualify that as a benefit in retrospect?
Well, detachment, as I say, as people go through life, they can become detached anyway. As you grow up, you lose attachment for certain things,
mm-hmm.
toys.
Mm-hmm. Right. I need toys.
So
that's right.
Not to seeing, hearing, and smelling,
you know,
tasting, five dollars and mind dough. Just only to different objects.
Yes.
But
moves.
Not to the absolute one.
But
the seeing, the hearing, the smelling, the tasting, the touching, the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So even if in old age you find that you no longer care about money or career or comforts or whatever,
mm-hmm.
who's to say whether that's a result of the practice you've been doing or whether it's not something that has happened
mm-hmm.
in your life anyway?
It seems to me that I could say, oh, well, there's more understanding or more moments of understanding, but whether or not, so therefore if I say that, it must mean that there are more moments of detachment at that time. But I think maybe it's because when we talk about detachment, again, one's thinking of objects and periods, so because the moments of understanding and the detachment with it is so brief,
mm-hmm.
just for a moment. So to say, oh, there's more detachment in one's life is difficult to say.
What about detachment from ignorance?
At those moments.
Yes, but it
from
grows too, little by little.
Yeah, detachment from ignorance. Perhaps it's easier to consider, okay, there may be more detachment from ignorance, but one can't say less attachment to the goodies or the nice smells
because
or sounds. Or,
even a sotabana is still cling to.
Yeah.
Actually, in a certain sense, there's more attachment in my life because when I was younger, I was less particular
mm-hmm.
about my lifestyle and what I was surrounded with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe as I get older, I'm more particular. You cannot measure it, but if you were tempted to try and measure it, you might find that by your measure there was more or less, but it wouldn't indicate that you hadn't been developing understanding in your life.
And thus detachment from ignorance.
And thus detachment from ignorance.
And that you would qualify as a benefit.
Yes.
The increased...
That is the aim or the goal or the...
Yeah, but so the detachment from ignorance
is not always apparent.
Mm-hmm. You could say it's apparent at that, those moments of understanding.
It's also apparent
it's
if one thinks about how one understood the world or life 10 years ago, 20 years ago, to how one understands it now. But again, it's dangerous because one understands life better in a sense as one gets older anyway. You have a different kind of perspective. And
necessarily?
Not necessarily. One can say one appears to understand life better as one gets older.
Mm-hmm.
Just by naturally aging. Then you see young people, I think 10 years ago I was like that and had those ideas, and now I realize that life isn't all about racing around, going to parties or whatever, whatever. So you think you understand life better because you're simply looking at it over a longer period, and you see, when you're an adult, you see children and you see what world they're caught up in.
Mm-hmm.
And but you realize that you've left all that behind.
But not necessarily. I don't think that it's necessarily a better understanding of life with
no,
age.
Exactly right. But it appears
conception,
to be.
Conception. In concept.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that conventional life?
Yeah, it can
it's
appear to be that way.
Conventional life, not real life.
Right.
And so what I'm saying is you'd be mistaken
mm-hmm.
if you thought that you understood life better.
Right.
Understood conventional life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one cannot say that there is right understanding of absolute
right.
reality,
right.
just conventional life.
Mm-hmm.
The only test really is when there is a moment of understanding of reality, then one knows that one has developed a moment of understanding reality.
Mm-hmm. If someone asks you about the changes of your life since you studied Dharma, how would you describe it?
Actually, I don't think or find out the answer at all because I just live from moment to moment. That is my answer. I don't mind, I don't think, I don't calculate.
If someone says,
yeah.
oh well, do you have more wholesomeness now
I don't
before,
have
then
any
you just
idea.
Say you have no idea.
No idea.
If you asked a person who was a born-again Christian the same question, you know, they'd have the same answer. Since I discovered Christianity, my life has become a lot more wholesome, I have much better understanding of that.
But if one asks about the understanding, yes, it grows, that is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing else. There's
mm-hmm.
no quality. You can't say, oh, more or less anger
mm-hmm.
or anything
yeah.
else.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
yeah.
Right. So there's no quality. You're not qualifying. You're not saying it's better or anything. You're just saying it has
usually
grown.
I don't think much about myself, whether I'm better or I'm worse or
mm-hmm.
what was yesterday or what is today.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just arises and they are not mine
mm-hmm.
at all. All realities are just realities.
Mm-hmm. This is the difference, isn't it, between a Christian, a newborn Christian, who is aiming for a better quality, who is aiming to achieve those
more
things.
Attachment too.
Right, who is aiming
yeah.
for more attachment actually
yeah.
to those things. That's such a huge difference because there's no increase of quality when one decreases ignorance. In Buddhism, it's totally different.
Because they do not really, they are not really able to distinguish unwholesome reality
mm-hmm.
and the wholesome realities. For example, like kindness and attachment, they are different realities. But when one is kind, seems to be kind, who knows whether it's attachment
mm-hmm.
or kindness. But absolute realities are absolute realities. Nobody can change the nature of kindness, which is wholesome, into unwholesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
But people might misunderstand that that is kindness, but actually it's attachment.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the point is that there is no test, and that there shouldn't or couldn't be any test.
Test of what?
Tests of what we're talking about, to see the benefits, because there isn't.
And this is why also a lot of people become disillusioned or are not interested to study the Buddha's teachings, because they say to you something like, oh well, you know, if we can't think, change. Well, of course, if you ask the meditation teacher, he'll say, oh yes, before I used to get angry and beat my wife, and now I'm calm all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, this sounds appealing, but
mm-hmm.
you say to Khunsa Chin, or what are the changes? Well, I don't even think about it, and I've no idea if there are any
mm-hmm.
changes, but you know, maybe less ignorance. Well, you know.
Because I'm not interested in myself. Because I'm not interested in myself.
That's right.
Yeah.
Break for lunch. Mm-hmm. Fish getting cold.
And then I do.
You say you don't have much time, but actually, it's not anything
for
to do.
Thinking.
It's not anything to do with time. Everyone is busy, and a lot of us are much busier. But it's really just
accumulations,
and also I think it's because you know that it's so useless to...
It's my nature.
It's your nature, right.
Yeah, my nature.
So have you always been like that? So.
Yes. Mm-hmm. From childhood, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So if it's not one's nature, then one has to think a lot.
However busy one is, one's going to...
Then it's one's nature.
Exactly.
I think, but I don't think much about comparing this or that, today or yesterday, or things like that.
But like that discussion we've just been having about running the business and getting your models to sign contracts and all this sort of thing, a certain amount of thinking is necessary,
right,
isn't it?
Right, right. It's your nature or the other's nature too, or my nature. When it's business for me, yeah.
And then
exactly.
you have to deal with it. You can't
just say,
oh, that was yesterday and tomorrow, wait and see.
You can't run a business by saying, I don't think about it.
No.
I just live in the moment.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not worried about anything. Just do, and then that's all. Mm-hmm. Enough for everything.
Yeah.
Do my best, then all right, what happens?
Do you think there's a sense in which one knows that a certain amount of thinking is good and useful, but then beyond that, thinking is not useful, and it's a sort of a reasonable...
I see that when one does one's best, that's all. Yeah, one doesn't have to regret or think much about what one has done, because one has done one's best. That's enough.
One's best, you mean in a wholesome kusala sense, or in a business sense, or any
both,
sense?
Both. Mm-hmm. Business is business.
Mm-hmm.
Is thinking real?
Right, back to reality.
Mm-hmm. So what is not real? If thinking is real, what is not real?
If thinking is the process, and we're aware of it as it's occurring, then it's real. Because it's a process, like seeing or hearing, so it would have to be real.
And what is not real?
And what is not real would probably be the concepts that go into or come out of thinking, but the process itself is real.
The story.
The story is not.
Not real.
But
you cannot touch it.
Right.
You cannot smell it.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot hear it. It's only in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, just thinking.
Thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts.
Yes.
Not real.
But thinking is.
Thinking is. Without thinking, there is no story, no concept. Can we just study from book? Or can we study reality of this moment too?
We have to read in a book without considering the reality of the moment, without considering the moment would have no, it wouldn't be real in that sense, it wouldn't be, we cannot just study from a book unless we're considering all of the different processes that are going on at that moment. Because an interpretation may be different if we hadn't considered all those things. No, so we can't just study out of the book, can we?
Mm-hmm. Because when we read a book on reality,
mm-hmm.
it's just name or word,
right.
But reality is now
mm-hmm.
working, performing its function like seeing or thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So the real study is the study of the reality which appears. Because when you read in the book, it's only the story about realities, not really understand the reality which arising now.
Mm-hmm. So that would explain why thinking is real, but the concepts and the thoughts are not, because they could be in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And they're what purpose do they have unless they're put into the mind and the mind
right.
thinks with them.
So the whole world of this moment is a big school.
Mm-hmm. Big school.
Yes.
Big school.
Very, very wide and very, very big.
Mm-hmm. But so if reality is the seeing and the hearing and the thinking, the
and
process.
What else? What else?
Seeing, thinking, hearing. Tasting, touching?
Yes, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching,
mm-hmm.
thinking, and what else?
Seeing, hearing. The things that, what about the objects?
Yes, the object is real too.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is touched,
mm-hmm.
or it is experienced,
mm-hmm.
so it has to be a reality.
Mm-hmm.
When it has its own characteristic,
mm-hmm.
like hardness, has its own characteristic, different from sound,
mm-hmm.
different from smell. But concept or story doesn't have any characteristic at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the memory of what has been experienced.
Mm-hmm.
When one is dreaming, is that moment real?
Difficult to say. No. No, no, it's not. But this is what the discussing dreaming is actually interesting, because for us we're rational and we know that it's a dream. So we would say it's only a dream, it's not real. But if we look at other cultures where their dreams are much closer to their perception of reality, where they listen to their dreams and they let it guide their lives in some primitive cultures, wouldn't that maybe just, the fact that we say a dream is not real may just be because of our cultural and mental evolution, whereas in some cultures it's still very close to their perception of reality. So for them a dream would be just as real as sitting here. I don't think I'm dreaming.
Do you think it's a kind of thinking?
Is dreaming thinking? Yes.
So the thinking is real.
Right.
But the stories
mm-hmm.
are just
stories.
So however close or far or whatever the story is about, anyone can think about anything,
mm-hmm.
but they're just different stories.
Right. Okay.
So the
dreaming.
Thinking is thinking, like
mm-hmm.
thinking here, but the stories are just stories.
Right.
We could say, oh, these stories are closer to reality and those are more bizarre, mm-hmm. but they're still stories. Right.
So the dreaming, the process is real with the dream.
The dream is not real, but the reality which thinks, mm-hmm. which dreams, is real. Is dreaming, moment of dreaming, different from moment of thinking right now? Are they different?
As it's experienced, no.
Because it's just thinking.
Right.
You know, sometimes we think, well, this kind of thinking is more worthy than that, but actually thinking is just thinking and different stories, different objects, and ultimately you can't see these stories are any more worthy than those. Or
mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree.
But when we use the word dream or dreaming, we use when we fell asleep, we fall asleep and then we think, not like now, because now we think after seeing, after hearing,
mm-hmm.
after the experiencing of five sense doors.
Mm-hmm.
But those moments, there is no experiencing of any doorway at all, only mind door
mm-hmm.
thinks.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we call that moment dream.
Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Not interrupted by other sensory experiences.
Mm-hmm. But maybe caused by the sensory experiences of the day or of
conditioned by. Definitely, you know, like one watches a late night movie and then it will condition your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But just like this thinking is also conditioned by thinking we had at lunchtime or
mm-hmm.
earlier, so it's always like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's always some connection and so like those people say, it's not for no reason that, oh, I have this kind of dream or you have that. It's conditioned by different experiences.
So life is only the process of six doorways, one by one at a time. One doorway or one process at a time.
Mm-hmm.
What about falling fast asleep without any dream? Is that real, those moments?
Without any dream?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible?
Yes, when one falls fast asleep.
According to research, not possible.
For a few moments.
Mm-hmm. There's no... Yes, it's real. The moment.
Are those moments real?
Yes.
What kind of reality are there?
Sleeping
reality. So when we talk about sleeping reality, dreaming reality,
right.
thinking reality, seeing reality, are these mental phenomena or physical phenomena?
Sleeping would sort of be both, wouldn't it?
When
sleeping would be physical reality.
When it's mental, it cannot be physical. When it's physical, it cannot be mental. Yeah.
Sleeping then would be physical.
I think it's very, very confusing for people, this definition of mental and physical.
Right.
I think it's totally misleading. Like if you said to someone, what is seeing mental or physical, and what is physical, I think it's better to
use the
experiencing and being experienced or something
and
like that.
Can we go on to nama and rupa?
Okay. So
is it alright for you?
So a recap. Earlier we were saying that you could put all the realities into two baskets. You could call one basket nama, which refers to those phenomena or those realities which experience an object, that do the experiencing, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking,
mm-hmm.
moments of experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those realities
that are experienced.
This but cannot experience. Cannot experience.
Cannot experience anything. Mm-hmm. Are the objects of the namas. So these ones we call rupa. Sometimes, you know, in English it's translated to mental and physical phenomena, but I think that's very confusing because see, how do you know seeing is a mental or rupa physical? It kind of, so I think it's easier to talk about nama and rupa,
right.
Experiencing mm-hmm. and those that cannot experience, right.
The question is about falling fast asleep,
falling
the
fast
moments,
asleep.
Sleeping
reality.
What type of reality are those moments?
So is it the first lot, the nama, or the second lot?
Rupa. The body from head to toe, the body cannot experience anything at all. When you touch, it's hardness or softness, which is experienced. But softness itself cannot experience anything. So the body, can the body sleep? No. What is sleeping? Rupa is the body, or the reality that cannot experience. Yes.
Mm-hmm. If it's got ing on the end, you can be pretty sure it's not.
Feeling, sleeping, testing, touching, thinking.
So the body is what is experiencing sleeping.
What about stinginess? Stinging.
Attachment.
Ness or N double S or I N J nama.
So
not hardness, because hardness is rupa.
Right.
It's easy, I think, to separate the realities into two main categories: the reality that can experience, and the reality that cannot experience.
So the stinginess would be the nama.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because it's the process of being stingy. It's
at that moment it experiences something.
Mm-hmm.
It arises
mm-hmm.
with the citta,
mm-hmm.
which understand the object as something that belongs to oneself or
so all those other mental factors we were talking about, attachment, ignorance, regret, aversion, they're all known.
By Pali term, it's cetasika.
Cetasika?
Yes. Citta is the faculty of experiencing an object, and cetasika arises with citta. It has different qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And rupa, three absolute realities in Delhi.
Mm-hmm. And the citta and cetasika together make up the namas. The nama can be divided into those two citta, the moments of experience, all the ings.
Mm-hmm.
And the, and the mental factors of cetasika.
Arise singly by itself? No?
Mm.
So you mean that citta has to arise with cetasika?
I suppose things could arise by themselves, but they wouldn't be experienced, so they wouldn't be perceived.
Can you give example? Oh, it's just only idea of thinking.
Okay,
I mean, maybe she means a sound in the forest. If no one hears it, then it arises by itself.
But it cannot just arise by itself. It needs
conditions.
Yeah, conditions like hardness. Whatever arises cannot arise singly. Like citta cannot arise alone by itself, it has to have cetasikas arising together as conditions for its arising.
You could say that the light that sounds in the forest, those rupas, can arise without... there are lots of rupas out there, but even if there's no experiencing of them. I could say that, for me, there's no rupa, there's no experiencing, but actually, regardless of whether I'm around or not, there are going to be rupas arising
By conditions, yeah.
By conditions and not for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And not simply. Not alone. There must be other reality arising together. Understands more about these realities, one can see that there is nothing that can be considered as me or myself at all. Because there are different elements. The element of seeing cannot change from the faculty of experiencing visible objects. Whenever it arises, no matter how many years ago or next time it sees, considering all realities as different elements will help one to understand that in reality, whatever has to arise by conditions, like the unpleasant feeling. No one can stop its arising when there are conditions for its arising.
I'm sorry to ask again, but citta and cetasika. Could you please just briefly define again so that...
Yes. Okay. Citta is that faculty which cannot remember, it cannot feel, it cannot intend to do anything. Because its faculty is just being able to experience an object. No matter if that object is pleasant or unpleasant. Like seeing now, there is feeling arising together, but feeling feels, feeling performs the function of feeling. It feels when it arises. But the experiencing an object, just that faculty which does not feel, is citta.
Okay.
And cetasika is the other mental factors of nama which arise with cannot arise together with attachment. So there are many different types of cittas according to cetasikas which arise with citta.
And they always arise together.
But different cetasikas. Mm-hmm. That's why there are so many different cittas by different cetasikas which arise with citta.
Mm-hmm.
When one says that wholesome moment, it must be citta and cetasikas which are wholesome. When we talk about unwholesome moment, unwholesome cetasika and unwholesome citta arise together.
So when you experience physical pain,
The experiencing, there must be the experiencing which is painful. The experiencing is painful, the body is not pain at all. Because the body does not experience anything, no matter how strong, hard you beat it. It cannot feel, it cannot experience anything. But the moment of experiencing that object, that moment is painful because of the quality of the tangible object, whether it's too hot or too cold or too hard, conditions such unpleasant feeling when there is the experiencing of that tangible object. Because what you take for a body are only tangible objects, from head to toe.
So which is citta and which is cetasika in physical pain? The experiencing of
the experiencing is citta, and the pain, the feeling pain, is cetasika. Excuse me, the experiencing is citta, and the feeling pain is cetasika.
Okay.
That's why each moment citta arises, there must be feeling accompanied. For example, indifferent feeling, you cannot tell because it's so very indifferent. But it's there, feeling indifferent. when someone asks you, how do you feel, you say, so-so, mm-hmm. indifferent mm-hmm. feeling. And citta and cetasikas arise together and fall away together from moment to moment.
Mm-hmm. Always together.
Always together. That's why one cannot take the one which has fallen away as I, mm-hmm. because there are conditions for it to arise and then fall away instantly, mm-hmm. very, very rapidly. No I who was eating there anymore, mm-hmm. see? But while one is doing something, it looks or it seems like I am doing, but actually only the experiencing which sees and thinks and condition the movement of the body. Because without citta and cetasika, the body cannot move.
Mm-hmm. Could we say the pain, take the pain as just a concept?
Never. It's real. Pain is real.
So the mental unpleasant feeling, of course, is cetasika, but the actual, what we call the cramp or the pain, what is it?
Cetasika, which feels unpleasant. The unpleasant feeling, no matter you call it pain or ache or itch or whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
it's that reality which feels mm-hmm. unpleasant,
but there
bodily.
Are other realities.
Right.
Physical realities,
yeah.
Heat,
yeah.
Hardness.
What about if, let's say, it's sort of physically very uncomfortable, but there's no aversion, there's no...
That is mental feeling then.
But no unpleasant mental
right.
feeling.
For an arahata, no
yeah.
matter...
So there's the actual pain that the arahata
bodily.
Is just different rupas, different heat and cold and...
The object
on.
Is the same,
yeah.
but the pain is there, but there's no mental unpleasant feeling.
So what is actually, forgetting about the mental unpleasant feeling, what one calls pain is just
bodily.
A combination of hardness and softness.
No, 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 no. Nama is nama, rupa is rupa. You cannot mix nama and rupa together. Without body, can
yeah,
you
yeah.
feel pain?
Yeah.
See?
So it's just bodily experiencing,
yeah.
What about people who have hallucinations about pains, aches and pains, and they have no actual
memory
actual illness? I mean, where's the pain then?
It's only memory of pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like when you see something that you used to know that is so sour
mm-hmm.
at that moment, sometimes you feel the effect
mm-hmm.
in your mouth, something like that.
So
it's only
is
the
it
memory.
Only memory. Is there any, so there's no bodily unpleasant feeling, there's no...
At moment
no,
of thinking, there
right,
is...
Right, because there's no actual
mm-hmm.
real...
I don't know.
What it means is there's no underlying, if in our case, hypochondria.
Can you remember the pain, your pain many years ago?
Yes.
No.
Yes. I don't think you can. If it's
you
have strong, very bad experience. You
but it's not the actual pain.
No, no.
No,
no.
But you can remember it for sure.
But
sometimes
a person...
Because I got this cut, you know, cesarean. That part, it was so painful, but I don't remember that pain, how it was painful.
I
remember is that, okay, it's painful.
No, I have very strong memory of some particular terrible pain I had for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so
different pieces.
Yeah. Depends on
mm-hmm.
accumulation.
So we can see that that can is also memory of pain, but it's not the actual pain.
Mm.
Some people who have, say, been injured at work, and although there's nothing wrong, they still say they have pain because maybe they feel they haven't received enough compensation or... No,
they could
well,
believe they do really have this pain, and it could be painful to them, although it may not... Maybe it isn't actually... Maybe if we could... actually detect physically if there's any pain occurring on a bodily part, even if there wasn't, their perception of it as pain.
Or the memory may be so strong
right.
that it may...
Even if it's not a memory, it could be a creation of the mind.
Yeah.
But that is not the real
thing. No. Then it's not pain. It's something else, isn't it?
If I remember this pain I used to have, if I think, start thinking about it now, conditions to think about it, and I almost can experience it because the memory is so clear, so it seems like you can experience, but of course physically I'm not experiencing, but that's how it appears at that time.
So the body sense is all over the body when it conditions the feeling of pleasant or unpleasant, bodily pleasant or unpleasant feeling, inside and outside as well. It's easy now if the question is, what is tasting? What kind of reality is tasting? ING. Instead of nama, it's ING.
ING. You remember the nama and the ING plus all the mental factors. Right.
So, do you still want to experience the mind? Or understand the mind is better? Otherwise, it's like looking for something that we don't know. Just assume that we know or understand what we are saying, like mind.
We assume we know or understand these concepts because we've sort of come to a consensus, sort of general understanding about what mind means, but actually, if you question it again, we don't know. We create these illusions and we pass them on from generation to generation.
So the term meditation in Buddhism, I think, is the development of understanding of reality, which appears, which is the present moment only. Not just thinking about the past or the future, but this very moment, the true nature of reality can be directly experienced too. The arising and falling away of reality right now. But it takes time, so long, long time, to develop understanding.
And this is what you define as meditation?
The insight meditation doesn't mean that one has to sit and concentrate on anything without understanding this moment. Mm-hmm. It is the development of understanding. The word enlightenment or insight is the right understanding that can directly experience the true nature of reality which appears now as it is, one by one. Because there are many realities appearing.
And when we use this term meditation, are we talking about vipassana?
Yes, vipassana, insight meditation.
Inside meditation. Yeah.
It is the development of right understanding of reality which appears now.
Right. And which actually the goal is to be in a constant state of vipassana, isn't it?
What do you mean?
I mean, the goal, what we're trying to do is to be constantly, not just have one moment, but to be constantly aware of the moments as they go by.
To let, to become detached from clinging to reality as self, and to become detached from ignorance too.
Mm-hmm. But impossible to be constantly aware.
So it's more
useful to consider developing understanding, and okay, one moment very precious and very valuable, maybe next day another moment, but impossible to be, if someone thinks they can be constantly
aware,
it shows no understanding.
No, of course not. But what I'm asking is, are we trying to attain sort of a constant vipassana, sort of constantly at work?
Well, vipassana means the development of right understanding of realities.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of thinking of constant vipassana, think of developing right understanding, developing vipassana.
It's also not exactly a state, which to me suggests something abnormal or quite different from how we normally are. If there's some understanding of the present moment, it's not as though one is in another state. It's simply that there is no ignorance at that moment of the nature of the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, if one has highly developed vipassana, it means an absence of wrong view and absence of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think it's helpful to realize that this doesn't connote going into a state as such. It's a lifting of the veil of darkness rather than
entering into a state.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the Buddhist teachings, the Buddha talks about bhavana. Bhavana is translated as mental development, but often translated as meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back to the teachings, there are two kinds of bhavana or mental development. One is vipassana, which we're talking about, and the other is development of samatha, translated as calmness, and people developed samatha before the Buddha came along.
Mm-hmm.
In high stages of jhanas, so it also means right understanding and right level of calmness, but on its own doesn't mean to detach it from yourself. Vipassana is developed. But even for the development of samatha, or calmness, rather, fork, there's a lot of misunderstanding. So a lot of people, you know, talk to people go to meditation centers and they feel that they're developing calm or samadhi or samatha or whatever. But then you say, okay, well, how are you developing it, or what's the object? And they say, well, we're just concentrating on ourselves or something. But actually, for the development of samatha or calmness, as Kunsichin has explained to me, one still has to be very clear what the object is and how it can condition calmness. So it can also begin to develop in daily life. For example, there are 40 objects of calmness which are discussed in the Buddhist teachings. Now, for example, one of those is death. So if someone just goes to a meditation center and just concentrates on death,
this in itself doesn't lead to calmness. One has to understand how considering death can lead to calmness. So if one considers at this moment, for example, that one may die in a moment, so all those objects of attachment, all the things one minds so much about, one's business, one's husband, one's house, everything can disappear at any time.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a condition for calmness
at
this moment. Mm-hmm. So there can be development of calm right now, again, without going into the temple. But if there's no understanding of the object and how it can condition calmness, whatever the location, it cannot develop. So for any kind of wholesomeness, whether it's giving or morality or calmness or vipassana, the understanding is very crucial.
Even use the term constant vipassana, one should understand first what vipassana is.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, by constant vipassana, see, vipassana means the right understanding which is highly developed. So it can directly experience the true nature of reality of this very moment, which arises and falls away. So there cannot be constant vipassana at all.
Because the moment when reality is gone already.
For a period of time, it's very short, because what we take for a minute, there are many realities arising and falling away. And the vipassana jnana, the vipassana, the panya, can directly experience reality as not self, nothing, just elements, which appears one at a time, not the mixture of the six doorways right now. So it has to be the moment when there are right conditions for its arising, no expectation, like we cannot expect for hearing to arise when there are no conditions for hearing. So when there is not yet the moments of vipassana, there cannot be any expectation for vipassana to arise, no matter how long you sit or how much you desire for it, because it has to be the panya which understands realities as not self, and then become detached and detached and detached and detached. Because you see that what hinders one to experience reality which is now arising and falling away, attachment and ignorance, unknowingly. There is ignorance about reality which appears unknowingly, but it's there, because it cannot understand visible object as just a reality and the seeing as just an element which sees, arising to perform the function of that element which sees, that's all. So by understanding more and more of realities to the degree that it becomes detached to the idea of self and experience the true nature of nama and rupa, stage by stage. So there are many different stages of vipassana, not constant.
You couldn't even talk about the Buddha having constant vipassana, or constant understanding, because at moments of seeing and hearing, understanding it. So it's for a moment and then gone.
Otherwise, it cannot uproot the idea of self at all, if there is not the clear understanding of the arising and falling away of moment when it arises. Because it's not just the intellectual understanding about the arising and falling away, but it's the direct experience, the moment when reality arises and falls away. And if there is no understanding of nama and rupa right now, one never reached that stage at all, because it's the matter of accumulating more and more understanding from moment to moment, and it's not you who is trying either. That's why one has to understand that characteristic of cetasika, the sati, the reality which is aware of the true nature of reality as nama or rupa. And awareness is not right understanding, see? They are different cetasikas.
You could say they're closely related.
They arise together. Whenever panya arises, there must be sati. But whenever sati arises, not necessary to have panya. That's why there are many stages of kusala, wholesome moments. Moment without panya, but it's wholesome. And moment when it's wholesome with panya, right understanding.
Earlier you were saying, oh, well, you never think about what's happened before or what happened yesterday, because anyway, it's not self or not what I did anyway. Some people would say that this sounds like avoiding responsibility. So if, for example, one upset one's friend yesterday, and then you say, oh, well, today I just forget about it because it's not self anyway. Someone might say, oh, well, that sounds like you're not taking in.
What is the use of thinking about yesterday?
Well, it may be that by reflecting on the mistake one's made yesterday, in this case the offence one caused, it may be that one can apologise today, or by reflecting one may avoid causing the offence tomorrow.
When Sati is aware and you know that it's not right, and then you have intention to do good next time, that's enough. That's enough.
But maybe by reflecting a little more on the story about
what led up to this occasion, or maybe...
Whenever it arises, I cannot help, but when it does not arise, I don't have to think about, should I better do that, thinking more about that. It depends on whether it arises or not.
Well, of course, it depends on whether it arises, but some people might feel it's more useful to reflect. I mean, of course, it's just thinking on a conventional level, I know, but some people may feel, like, for example, oh, the girl not signing the
contract,
so but maybe I would say, okay, this is the time to really think carefully about it so that next time maybe you get your models to sign and you really should give it some serious thought now because of the problem you've had, so that according to our different accumulations we may think more, but how much we think will depend on how useful we think it is to think. So, and on a personal level too, okay, well, I had a major fallout with my husband and talked about getting divorced over this thing, so maybe I would say, okay, you should have a kind of good think and maybe talk to someone about why this has got become related with the business, and maybe it's time to go and get some
help. Those are present moments only. Present moments. We can talk about anything and then finish.
It'll just depend on accumulations, how much you control.
Because the best thing in one's life, one learns to understand that being aware of thinking too.
Then
there is the understanding that one cannot help thinking to arise or not to arise. So one is not too much.
One could say ultimately it doesn't have any, we could say, well, it's very important to think like this, but ultimately it's, it has no value.
I spend my whole day thinking. It's my job to think in words and then to write the words down on a piece of paper. That's all I do. But
present moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with it.
Like we were saying, if you're running a business, you have to do some thinking. It's the same.
Because when there is no understanding, there is present moment. One is involved in thinking.
One's lost in the stories, and one, well, you know, you've got children. You have to think about
daily life. So, if one understands the value of being aware of just a moment, then it will continue on to have more conditions for seeing the value, just being aware of the moment.
Usually what happens is one's so lost in the stories that one forgets entirely about the present moment. It is just thinking.
So the question is, what is birth? Yes. What you call? One is born, one was born, you were born. What reality is? And that's all. What else? Only nama and rupa. And this? Can the moment of birth stay? Can a moment of seeing stay? Can a moment of death stay? And after that, then? But when one realizes that nothing can arise without conditions, as long as there are still conditions for the arising of nama, can nama not arise after death, or it has to arise?
It would have to arise.
Because there are still conditions, like just a moment ago and this moment, see, different moments, but there are conditions for this moment to arise. And then there are conditions for next moment to arise.
There's no condition that
no moment arise. After the death of Buddha, the one who doesn't have any conditions for nama and rupa to arise anymore, then nama and rupa cannot arise after that. Otherwise, one cannot stop the flux, the conditions, the arising and falling away of nama and rupa. Not from this life only, but from uncountable moments ago and uncountable moments ahead.
Moments of understanding.
Jhana or jhana, there are two words.
I think we talked about jhana.
I think it was jhana.
It was jhana.
Let's see.
A small moment where one understands, one has an understanding, almost like a blissful moment. Is that the same word? Jhana?
No, different. Yeah, quite different.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was the same. No. What's the difference between jhana and jhana?
Jnana is understanding. You mean N-A-N-A?
The moment of directly experiencing reality. Now we are talking about reality, and reality is appearing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the moment of directly experiencing the arising and falling away of reality.
Mm-hmm.
But jhana is that moment.
Oh, I see. Okay.
When panya has developed highly enough.
Yeah. Okay.
So jhana is the experiencing of arising and falling away.
The true nature of reality, the three characteristics of reality which arises. It cannot stay. It's now arising and falling, one at a time, completely gone. And the right understanding which accompanies citta, that directly experiencing the arising and falling away, or the true nature of nama and rupa, through mind or is vipassana jhana.
And jhana?
Okay, so earlier, I mentioned that when you're talking about Bhavana, mental development, there are these two prongs of the fork. So one is development of vipassana, development of wisdom, vipassana jnanas, to enlightenment. The other branch is samatha, and the highest level of samatha, Bhavana, the jhanas. So even for the Buddha's time, Hindu ascetics experiences jhanas, which are these blissful states free from unwholesomeness, but the understanding is only at the level of development of calmness, not at the level of vipassana. So the Buddha had experiences jhanas and had developed these states, but realized this wasn't the whole
picture.
The whole picture. And through the development of vipassana, he showed that there is an even higher level of wisdom which totally eradicates unwholesomeness, because development of jhanas suppresses unwholesomeness during that period, but not eradicated. So when the person comes out of the jhana, defilements will reappear, and it's not the end of lifetimes. So the development of calmness and jhanas is good and pure, but it depends on whether one's aim is detachment from all realities or this. And I think that Khun Sir Chin would say, well, for developing calmness, one can develop it in daily life, but actually for the jhanas, one has to live in a temple or a very extreme existence. But she doesn't like talking about it because she's interested in the development of understanding of vipassana in daily life, because in a way it's like a kind of attachment. One's still attached to oneself to attain this blissful state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the giving up of self.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Buddha's time, many of his followers, they were dry and not dry arahats. So there were those arahats who had already attained jhanas and who then attained arahatship, and there were others who had never experienced jhanas but developed wisdom to become arahats. But I don't know why Ivan was
Yes, he probably heard some story about it. I don't know.
Or maybe it's just the experience he had when he was young.
Mm-hmm.
And he still remembered that this
His jhana experience.
No. Because you see that in order to develop jhana, one must understand reality to the degree that one see the danger of the sensuous object. For example, it's not like someone that, I would like to practice and then I go and sit so that the mind will become just still and then blissful at that moment. That is
so
not,
what happened to the young kid?
That is that is...
Well, how come you never say anything
that,
to him?
That is not...
You keep quiet, so he thought it was...
No, because he didn't use the word jhana.
He did use jhana.
Did he? Jhana?
Yes.
Jhana?
Yes, he did use jhana.
He used the word jhana.
Many times, I remember. He talked to you many times.
His jhana, not the Buddhist jhana.
No.
I don't ever recall Ivan saying that he claims to have attained jhana.
He said when he was young.
When he was young,
something happened.
He might have said
something
like
happened
jhana
like that,
or whatever.
Right.
That's
what he said. He said it was a moment that he felt was the closest he had ever been to a jhana moment. That's what he said.
Very blissful.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to hear what were you going to say. We must be understanding of...
Because you see that when one used the word blissful, and one uses jhana, it depends on one's own misunderstanding that blissful is jhana.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Oh, I see. Oh,
because of the lack of understanding. So one can use any word, any term with one's understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Buddha's time or before the Buddha's time, people were very, very wise and they had accumulated lots of understanding,
mm-hmm.
but not to the degree that they could develop vipassana, understanding reality of this moment, because
by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as they could do was developing calmness in daily life, and by understanding the attachment to sensuous object and see the danger of such attachment, they develop kusala, we better say the word wholesomeness in daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And one can see that at moment of giving things to the others, it doesn't mean that there is wholesome citta all the time. Because there can be good intention at moment of giving,
mm-hmm.
but there can be other moment of akusala,
mm-hmm.
like Kun Sarah
mm-hmm.
said before. So by understanding the different types of citta, as my citta, which is angry or which is attached, and other defilements, that those people in Buddha's time knew how to develop kusala longer than just giving. So after giving, they could recollect the kusala citta, the wholesome moment with right understanding, and by understanding that it will help the kusala citta to arise by keeping on thinking about that object. So the mind become calm, and the different stage of calmness, which people use the word concentration or samadhi, will appear. So it's different from just giving and then a little moment of kusala. But those moments, the mind is so calm, but it has to be kusala, not just want to be calm. This is the difference between wanting to be calm and calmness when there are conditions. And so they can develop higher and higher stage of calmness up to the degree that there is no moment of thinking about sensuous object at all. No seeing, no hearing.
I think you told me though before that jhanas people have to, for development of vipassana, come up and lead one's ordinary daily life until arahatship, or the development of jhanas, they have to be in temples or special
because sound can distract them.
Yeah.
right? So they have to stay in a quiet place to have more kusala without thinking, even thinking of any sensuous object of any Dawe.
Because so this is also why often people have the idea of having to be in a quiet place, or
they miss out, they say
they're developing concentration, but actually they don't understand what the object of the calmness
And they don't understand how to develop calmness, because it has to be kusala with right understanding only. If it is only just kusala citta without right understanding, that person cannot reach the stage of jhana.
Mm-hmm.
This is the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no understanding of the danger of sensuous object, and there is no understanding of the difference between attachment to blissful moment.
Mm-hmm.
Just call it jhana, but it's not jhana. It can be anything happened. And when right understanding arises, it knows whether that is attachment or detachment from that object. Because usually one is attached, right, to any object in one's life, and also it's something strange or something strange happening.
Mm-hmm.
One is attached instantly. So whenever whatever arises, there is attachment, so that cannot be jhana. Jhana must be moments without attachment, aversion, ignorance, because of the consciousness of citta, which is kusala and akusala. So when akusala citta appears or arises, panya sees that it's akusala. So the mind turns towards the object which conditions the kusala to arise on and on, so that the akusala moments doesn't have any conditions to arise for a period of time.
We talk about calmness in daily life, if there's understanding of how the object can calm the mind here. How much can be developed in daily life? Just moments here or there, or can it be developed?
It depends, because in the Buddha's time, even a lay woman had reached the stage of jhana too.
In her daily life?
I don't know in her daily life, but she didn't go away. Maybe her house is the proper place, no sound, posterior sound or something like that, not noisy. But we don't know, it depends on her accumulations too.
She may have had jhana.
But I think that one must be honest and have right understanding, so there can be conditions for develop higher understanding. Otherwise, one mistake ignorance for understanding, and one cannot develop any understanding at all.
And how, when we speak about the comments which lead up to jhana, how do we develop? Calmness.
One has to see the benefit of kusala, wholesome moments, in order to develop even jhana. But jhana cannot eradicate unwholesomeness. And the development of understanding, which is vipassana, takes such a long time, so why should one spend time to develop the way that cannot eradicate.
The only thing one would say is that because all kinds of kusala are useful, and there's so little kusala in a day, and it may not be the time for right understanding. So if one knows about the value of generosity, or one knows about the value of abstaining from hurting others, or one knows about the value of calmness, it can be conditioned for other kinds of to appear. I mean, it's very, very helpful.
Very spontaneous.
But you see that the important thing is to see whether there is attachment or right understanding. This
right.
is the way to tell.
Yeah.
If it's attachment, you can be sure there's nothing resembling. If we talk now about jhana or nirvana, it's impossible to actually have any comprehension of what it is like not to have any attachment. because all our experience is geared around attachment, mm-hmm. so you know, we can't really comprehend what is.
Because when one thinks about jhana, one has to understand the object of jhana too, whether it's the right object or the wrong one. When it's the wrong one, it cannot be jhana. There are many things that help one to see whether it's the kusala or akusala, the right understanding or wrong understanding.
I think you've said before that actually jhanas can be a hindrance to the developing of vipassana, because someone who has attained jhanas will not have any inclination to develop.
Anyone who has attained jhana, after that moment, there must be the moment of recollecting previous moment of jhana with right understanding about the factors of jhana. The vitaka cetasika, the vichara cetasika, the piti cetasika, the ekakata cetasika. And to see the difference between vitaka cetasika and vichara cetasika needs quite very, very sharp and keen right understanding, because they are so very close. Anyone who has attained jhana, after that process, the next process has to be that particular one, mm-hmm. recollecting the previous moment of jhana with right understanding.
How can they recollect vitaka or vichara or any of these other cetasikas without understanding of non-self? How can you understand?
It's like anger.
I see.
It's like attachment. One still take a smile.
Self, but one
yeah.
can recognize.
Yeah.
Do you believe that anyone can attain jhanas today?
If I would say that no, then people would ask, how do you know? But what about the conditions for attaining? We can ask, we can talk about.
You can tell us truthfully, we won't go and tell the you won't go.
See? We can find out. Not difficult.
Whether there's any understanding.
Not difficult, yeah. They cannot answer anything. No right understanding.
If they just talk about their blissful state, you can be sure that.
No right understanding, so you know that that cannot be conditions for attaining jhana.
But how do we know? How can you judge for yourself whether you're experiencing right understanding or wrong understanding?
Right understanding understands, and wrong understanding cannot, and ignorance cannot. See? But right understanding can understand. The moment of understanding is not you, it's right understanding which understands. It's impossible for right understanding not to understand. And it's impossible for ignorance to understand.
But if someone believes that they understand, if someone has the impression that they're experiencing right understanding,
yeah, we can ask how and why.
So basically, if you understand the object and the process.
The object and the reality which appears when jhana arises. The object.
You're talking about right understanding of any reality.
Any reality. Right, I mean like.
A moment of.
If someone else says they understand.
Right.
No, that's just what I mean. Just in any reality, how can we judge ourselves whether. We may create illusions.
Yeah, because many people just read from the book about the development of jhana,
mm-hmm.
and they just follow the book, mm-hmm. and just tell, oh, it's the earth and the fire or whatever they say,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know exactly what awareness is. They use the word which represent concentration,
mm-hmm.
and concentration can be right concentration or wrong concentration. And they don't know.
How can we distinguish what is right concentration and what is wrong concentration?
Without panya, without right understanding, it is wrong concentration. With panya, it's right concentration.
And basically, but with certain things, we may have the illusion of having right understanding.
Mm-hmm.
How can we choose for ourselves, decide for ourselves if it's right understanding or wrong understanding?
at this moment, can there be awareness of wholesome citta and unwholesome citta?
Actually, that was my next question.
Because this...
How can we distinguish if we're having a moment of
when there is no right understanding, it's impossible. You just estimate that it might or it might not be this or that. But when there's right understanding, it begins from understanding, from hearing,
mm-hmm.
and understanding the distinction between tranquil meditation, samatha, and vipassana,
mm-hmm.
see? And understand the distinction between samadhi, concentration, and awareness. So if no one can answer about the difference between these two,
mm-hmm.
it means that there is no right understanding.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
For ourselves, in the beginning, getting back to reality,
mm-hmm.
awareness, and different doorways, it has to begin for us with some awareness of the reality, such as seeing it as an object, and hearing and sound. In other words, the experiencing through different doorways.
Not developing jhana.
Not developing jhana.
Yeah. The first step is to understand the difference between sati and samadhi. Because people can understand the characteristic of samadhi without right understanding, because they know the moment of focusing, concentrating on an object. Anyone can understand that. It doesn't need right understanding to understand. But to understand the distinction between samadhi and sati, it is panya. Because how one can see that sati is different from concentration, from samadhi, if it's not panya? But by developing awareness, by understanding the characteristic of awareness, whenever awareness arises, no doubt about that characteristic of awareness. It's like hearing. Whenever hearing does not arise yet, how can there be understanding of hearing? It's only thinking about hearing, considering about hearing. But when hearing arises, it's the moment of developing understanding of that characteristic which experiences sound. So when awareness is aware, it's not just hearing, it's not just feel the hardness or softness in daily life, but it's the moment of being aware of the characteristic which is not self, which has its own characteristic through different doorways, different from concentration, completely different. So when one develops samatha or vipassana, it takes a bit too, not only concentration. So that has to be right understanding with everything right. Right awareness, right concentration, right effort. Everything is right when right understanding arises.
But back to your question about how do you know whether it's understanding or not oneself or others, and that's why we talk about so the first step is to know in theory what all the different realities are, because otherwise you think it's understanding, but understanding of what, or someone else says there's understanding, but understanding of what.
Mm-hmm.
So they could think this is all understanding of when I walk to the garden, the short of understanding, because it's just thinking about the concept.
Mm-hmm.
So the more one knows about different realities, the more one knows about what understanding. So in the beginning it has to be theoretical, theoretical understanding, by knowing about the different realities, and that's the way that it can grow deeper and deeper.
So that's what he was connected to, think about realities, about realities. We can't be really understand.
The mental process is maybe what they think is seeing into the future. Or something. And for us, we don't experience those, but would we say that they're not real? That they're not, that process is not the reality, that it's just an illusion?
What process?
A process of someone who believes that they can see into the future.
Or that they can experience their past lives?
Right, or that they can experience a past life.
Can we say that it's a function of memory?
Future?
Whatever is the object, like story of past or future, mm-hmm. is memory. Memory remembers what is past and what is future. If there's no memory or remembers at all, how can one know that it's past or future? So it's just a moment of the function of what the cetasika, which is sanya cetasika, memory. Mm-hmm. When we come to just a moment, the present moment, because the future moments haven't come yet, mm-hmm. and the past already gone. So the present moment is the real one, and there is sanya, memory, at that very moment, which remembers the past and the future. Just a moment of thinking. In order to see that nothing can be considered as permanent being or self, it's just different elements which arise by conditions. Even memory is just an element which arises with citta and it falls away too. Memory cannot stay, but there are conditions for memory to arise again and again and again with each citta.
The memory might be right or wrong. I mean, like if you think about something that happened when you were 3 years old, mm-hmm. there can be the thinking and the memory, but things may get mixed up, so it might be right or wrong, thinking and memory. Recognizing, you could call it recognizing. Yeah.
So memory as cetasika would arise with any kind of citta, like thinking,
yes,
perceiving.
At every moment of view.
At least there are 7 cetasikas arise with citta, at least. When it's unwholesome, it's more than 7. When it's wholesome, it's more than unwholesome. And one can see the ignorance because citta and cetasika arising and falling away unknowingly all the time. See how much ignorance is there?
Nothing constant.
Of each world constant. So by not knowing anything about this moment cannot eradicate the idea of self and wrong view and ignorance at all. Not just by experiencing something, being excited about it. Those who understand realities and conditions for different realities to arise will not be easily excited at all.
One is skillful, one isn't, but she thought this sounded very arrogant. How would you answer?
People can have any thought about anything, but can we change the pleasant feeling into unpleasant feeling, or the unwholesomeness into wholesomeness, like arrogant? Is it nice or is it wholesome? Its nature is unwholesome, so we just talk about nature of realities. Mm-hmm. It's not our own judge.
Mm-hmm. Why is anger unwholesome in nature if it produces useful consequence, conventionally speaking? Why can't we call it
all right,
wholesome?
Let's have the very simple question, like who likes anger? And who see the benefit of anger?
Well, some people see the benefit. They say, oh, well, if I didn't get angry with something, something. No, this is some way that people think that it leads to some good result.
Yeah.
And if I would just smile and spoke sweetly.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes showing anger to another person brings the
right
result.
All right. Is it more benefit not to have it arise?
Well, of course we would say so, but not everyone agrees with us.
It doesn't matter whether it is agreed, but then that nature, what is the use of anger? What, how useful it is?
This friend that Sarah is talking about is actually a psychologist.
This is modern psychotherapy. You can't say anything is good and bad.
A certain aspect.
I was going to say it sounds dated by politically correct speech and that sort of thing.
There's a certain point of view that people who don't show their anger, this can be the cause of some of their problems in their life.
What
they can show their anger
is opposite of anger? What reality is opposite of anger?
So people are kind of encouraged, yes, to bring up all the anger of their childhood and let out all the emotions that have been suppressed and they've had metta for too long and now it's time to let out the anger.
By conditions, not by their will.
Mm-hmm. But people actually think that this is useful and they just disagree, they won't agree. She thought that we were laying value judgment, she just didn't think we could lay a value judgment and say anything was good or bad.
Does
so
she want to
agree that anything was good or bad?
Does she want to have anger every day because she sees that it's useful?
No, she just doesn't agree. She just doesn't agree that anything is good or bad, so I guess she wouldn't be really interested in developing anger or not developing it, but she just doesn't think that...
But why don't we talk about the nature, the true nature of everything as it is, not as our like or dislike?
Mm.
So how do we know the nature, the true nature of something?
Whenever anger arises, does one feel pleasant or good or not having anger is much better?
Okay, but then you could say, all right, well, one doesn't feel good, but that can't be the criterion because attachment one feels very good about, but that...
We have to question stage by stage from one to another question, like, at moment when anger arises, is it not better not to have anger arise?
Well, I would agree with you, but she wouldn't agree.
So she'd like to have anger every day, if it's good. Whatever is good, she should have it more.
Depending on the situation.
It has, depending on the situation.
Yeah, because
right.
He doesn't know the nature.
Purpose,
because he doesn't know the true nature of anger yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because she interpret anger as she think from one situation to another situation.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So
but just talk about
and...
anger itself,
mm-hmm.
not concerning any situation at all. Ask her to talk about just anger, no connection with the situation.
Mm.